The Fan on Demand. Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Untouchable. Seriously, we dare you to try and touch him. Bob McCowan at Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I got a one-eared headset. So here's what happens. You go away for 2 weeks. You're minding your own damn business, and you come back, and the entire place is turned upside down. People aren't where they're supposed to be. We have a green room out here, but apparently that's going to get turned into something. A cheese buffet or something. And we had what we used to call the ballroom. And it's not what you think. It was a room with half baseballs. On the wall in the shape of the, you remember the old Sportsnet logo thing? Oh, there's that's the waiting room. That's the green room. But you can't show the ballroom, though, can you, Jen? You can't, can you get around that far? That thing is going to strangle itself. Well, there's the ballroom. It's over there behind that glass. There are people probably meeting in there right now, or they were a few minutes ago. That's hard to see. But up against the other wall is where the boardroom was, the ball thing was. Anyway, so that's where the producers used to hang out. That's where the primetime people used to hang out. You know, that's where Brunt would go in and tell everybody what to book on the show when he's on. You know, as the self-declared executive producer. Oh, we found my headset? Where'd you find it? Did you go back in there? Was in the closet in the ballroom, which isn't the ballroom anymore. Spectacularly good. Wait a sec. Hold on. Amuse yourselves for a second. Let me just plug this in. We'll be able to hear. This will be great. Testing 1, 2, 3. Oh, beautiful. Feel like I never left home. Except you bring this in the middle of my story. Now my story's not relevant anymore. So that was the room where we used to gather. Well, apparently over the last 2 weeks, they've booted us out. And now we're in the cattle club over on the other side, which is like a big room where they put all the little people. And let's be honest. People they don't want to run into, people that don't really have important jobs, people that are too insignificant to be seen by anybody important. So that's where we are now. Well, I say we, but I mean we in the kind of generic biblical kind of sense, which is to say all you guys behind the glass. I don't have a place. If you're looking for me, good luck. I'm unfindable. I don't have an office. I don't have a desk. I don't have a phone. I don't have a phone number. If you call Rogers and ask for me, I don't think I even exist. Now, the truth is it's by design more than anything else. I'm not angry about it. It's a good thing. So you guys moving over there really doesn't affect my life a whole lot. But I know I went in there today and they were yelling and screaming and complaining and kicking furniture around. And you had it sweet in that little room, didn't you? You could close the door, have a little private, your own private little space. And now you're with the cattle. All right, we're going to take phone calls today. I know, it's Tuesday. But I've been away, and Monday was a holiday, and Mondays don't count when they're holidays. Even if I'm here, they don't count. So we figured time for you to talk to somebody intelligent, because I know you've had Blair and you've had Friedman. Who else has hosted this show while I've been away? Anybody else? Sid's hosted it too? Oh, see, you know, you haven't had anybody that you can really warm up to. Unlike me. And so we figure we'll give you a chance. So 870-590-STAR-590, 1-888-666-0590. Phone line's open right now if you want to call in. So there's no topic. But this is the first day of, the first real working day of the month of September, which raised an issue for me. For the past 20 seasons, the Toronto Blue Jays almost inarguably have not played a meaningful baseball game in the month of September. Not since 1993, where they won the World Series. Is that streak now broken? Tonight, the Toronto Blue Jays open a 3-game series against the Tampa Bays. Is tonight's game a meaningful baseball game? They are 5.5 games back of the wild card, but they have to leapfrog a couple of teams in order to get there under any circumstance. Or three teams, I guess. They'll leapfrog three teams just to get to the wild card. So it's 5.5, but it's 5.5 with an asterisk, you know? If there's nobody between you and the next wild card team, then all you got to worry about is them. It's a kind of mano a mano thing. We're 5.5 back, but we win, they lose. We're 4.5 back. We win, they lose. You don't understand? When you've got three or four teams, those teams are all not going to lose over and over again. One team, you got a shot. But when you got three that you have to get past, and you got to make up 5.5, I'm going on record right now as saying, tonight's game is not meaningful. It's not relevant. If you're a Blue Jay fan, you'll be hoping, because mathematically they're still alive. But is it a real meaningful game? Do you have that tingle as we get to the final month of the season? That special feeling that only comes with the anticipation of the possibility of moving on? And I must tell you, I don't. I don't think this is doable. I know that there are websites out there that do mathematical projections, and I'm sure the number is pretty small. But I wouldn't bet anybody at 50-1 on the Blue Jays' chances. I wouldn't take 50-1 on the Blue Jays' chances of making the postseason. I don't think that number is high enough. And in that circumstance, it is pretty difficult to just, in my mind, to justify that this team is playing meaningful baseball games. What do you think? You don't have to go down that road. I'm just giving you that option. Now, what do you want to say now? 0.9% chance? All right, so that's not like 100-1. It's actually 100-something-1. I have to do the math. I think it's like 101-1. Well, I wouldn't take that number either. You got to give me, I just don't think it's possible. Mathematically, sure. But there have been plenty of years where the Blue Jays probably weren't mathematically eliminated till maybe the middle of September. But they were gazillions of games out. This team may not be mathematically eliminated until the last week of the season. But being mathematically eliminated and realistically eliminated are two entirely different things. So your thoughts on that, you have the phone. As mentioned, Brunt is wandering around, so he's back from vacation too. We got a bunch of suits on the show today. Alex Anthopoulos, the GM of the Blue Jays. Tim Bezbachenko, the GM of the FCs. We're getting rid of everybody now in the middle of the season. Coach, best player. Now they tried to get rid of him. They'll probably do that in the wintertime. So we'll talk to him. Masai Ujiri, back from Africa, back at work. See how he feels about his roster. And Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe will join us. So all that coming up. So it's a pretty good show, I think. We'll see how we do with it. We'll go to phone calls. Pat in Richmond Hill, you're first today. Hello.
Bob, welcome back.
Thank you, pal.
We missed you.
All right. I missed you, too.
All right, here we go.
My nose growing.
I want to go ahead. I talked to you after, I don't know, 10 years or so, just before the trade deadline.
Oh, of course, I remember very, very clearly.
The trade deadline in July. And we both agreed, obviously, that obviously the Blue Jays could not be selling or anything at that point, although I didn't want anything to do with selling off young assets. But nevertheless, one thing I'd mentioned to you then sort of came clear in my mind. I didn't think the Jays are good enough. I didn't think this team is good enough. And what I was hoping to do, and hopefully you can ask Anthopoulos this, did we place any players on waivers, retractable waivers?
I can ask, but I don't. Okay. I'm not.
He won't tell.
There were players. They have announced some. Okay. I didn't see any.
Fair enough. So we have basically Cabrera, Rasmus, Jansen, although Jansen up and down the last month or so. Nonetheless, I don't understand if we haven't, why we didn't. Okay.
I'm told Batista and Encarnacion were among those that were put on
I hope so. I hope everyone was on there. Yeah. I hope Reyes was on there. Reyes at $20.5 million for the next 3 years is statistically is a $5.5, $7.5 million player. Look it up, statistics.
I wouldn't argue that, but again, what are you prepared to rip this team apart and start over again?
What I'm prepared, Bob, is the following. This, I would have liked to have done what I said earlier, put it on waivers. By the way, give away nobody. If you get a better offer for Cabrera rather than a draft pick when he signs elsewhere, you do it. If not, you keep the player. I'm here not to give away a single player. I just don't think this team, the way it's constructed, is, and I think we're fearful. I don't know, it's sort of, maybe it's a Canadian thing. Maybe it's a Toronto thing. I don't know. But we're almost scared to make a change. And I'm going to give you a point. Boston, and I know you know this. To the listeners that don't know, the Red Sox to New England, it's not just the Massachusetts, are basically what the Leafs are, minimum, if not more. It's passionate beyond, if you spend any time there, everyone's a Red Sox.
Okay, what's the point?
Look what just happened 3 years ago. They signed Crawford. They made a huge trade for Gonzalez. Wasn't working out. What happened? They basically blew the team up a year into it.
Yep.
Sold them off to L.A. You don't hear things like, oh, what kind of a message does that send? They said, it's not working out. We're doing it. This year, I mean, again, they gave away not just their best pitcher they sold. They made him an offer, increased it by 50%. He didn't sell it, trade. We're almost scared here, and it comes from many members of the media. What kind of a message does it send? Well, I mean, I go to a lot of games. It sends the message that you're trying to improve. It's almost like we're stuck with what we've done. We made a couple trades. You and I argued a few years ago. I love the Miami trade, arguable if it worked out or not. I hated the Dickey trade then, and I hate it even more now. Again, I thought we were paying beyond retail. I just hope now that if we didn't, if we be proactive, do things.
All right. I got to cut you off because you're making a speech, and I appreciate it, but we got other people to get to. I don't concur with the caller's entire assessment. I think it's too simplistic. I don't doubt for a second that the general manager, whether it's Alex Anthopoulos or anybody else of any team, is constantly trying to improve the ball club. I don't think anything is necessarily off the table at any particular time. I don't think the Boston Red Sox philosophy is dramatically different than the Toronto Blue Jays philosophy. It will be different from time to time, depending on the circumstances. It doesn't mean you shouldn't evaluate the general manager because he is in the performance business and you are entitled to evaluate him upon the results that his teams produce. And it's pretty hard to give Alex anything more than maybe if I had to give him a grade, a C. I think it would be hard for me to give him anything better than that. I'm not calling for his dismissal. I'm not certain that another general manager over the past 5 or 6 years would have specifically done a better job. But you're graded on what your teams do. And this team continues to be a around 500 team. Too often below 500, but just never there, never in contention. And the reasons are going to be different in every season. Don't focus on those things. Focus on the overall results. Is this organization moving in a particular direction? The thing, and I'm going to move along, but the one thing that I'm A, encouraged about, but B, confused over how to utilize it, is the fact that this team may well have 4 starting pitchers as soon as next year under the age of 25 that they control for an extended period of time. We've seen it before in baseball. The Oakland A's had, you know, a bunch of studs. Tampa's had a bunch of studs, all young pitchers that kind of come up together. And it raises this question. If you have all 4 of the young studs in your starting rotation next year, which I don't think is going to happen, but if you decided to do that, I'd be okay with it. But do you need Encarnacion? Do you need Bautista? Do you need Reyes? Do you need the 30-plus guys in age with big salaries now? Or do you go looking for prime younger players, either prospects or guys who have established themselves, so that when this pitching staff is ready to deliver success, the core behind them may not necessarily be of comparable age, but are still have their futures in front of them, still can give you multiple seasons to support that young pitching staff. And I'm not sure that's what you do. But it's got to be one of the things in the conversation. And we'll talk to Alex about that. Dave is in Newfoundland. Hello.
Hello, Bob.
How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great.
What can
great
I do for
show,
you?
Big fan.
Thank you.
First time caller.
Glad you're on.
I'm going to talk to you about a subject that I know that you don't usually, you prescribe the theory of it. They don't really have a big impact, and that is like a manager of a team like Gibby this year.
Yep.
My question to you is, could you give me an evaluation of this year, an evaluation analysis, and maybe do you think he is the right man to captain this ship moving forward, and was he the right man in the first place?
I think he was, and I'm not sure he's not. It is commonly held belief, and I don't necessarily disagree with it, that the only way to truly evaluate a manager is based upon how he uses the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And I have seen very few occasions this year where I absolutely disagreed with a decision that Gibby made. Okay. And principally, when I say when he used the bullpen, In the way I analyze it, it's not so much about who you bring in. Because no manager knows whether Loop's got it that night or McGowan's going to pitch well that night. You don't know. That's a crapshoot. But are you unafraid to put a guy out there and then pull him right away if you think he doesn't have it? I've seen Gibby do it repeatedly. I'm confident he can do that. Some managers I've seen in the past make a decision, and they stick with a guy. And even if you're sitting there and you know he hasn't got it that night, they just keep letting him go. Right. Gibby doesn't do that. He'll make another change. I like that. That's my thought process. The other one is when you take your starter out. So it doesn't really relate to the bullpen, but it does. And if you look at Gibby's been pretty consistent in terms of trying to get guys in around 100 to 110 pitches. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, in this day and age, that's the right number to have. Right on. He also has not been sentimental. How many times has he taken guys out? Now, it may not be a whole lot, but he has taken guys out in the ninth inning with a chance for a complete game or a chance for a shutout.
That's true, yeah.
He's made those moves. Those are unpopular moves with those players. Guys want to finish games, especially when they're within one, two, or three outs. You know, you get to 100-and-something pitches in the seventh inning. Well, you're going to get taken out. That's all there is to it. But you get into the ninth inning, your pitch count gets up to 115 or so. Gibby will yank you.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily make him popular with the players, but I believe it's the right thing to do both for the immediate situation and for the long term. So I have no issue, really.
So you have no negative. There's nothing.
Right. So, but here's so now here's the part you don't know and I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
How does he manage the people?
Yeah.
And guys get ticked from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But have we heard anybody really take a shot at Gibby?
No.
I haven't heard one. So all I can assume is they either A, like him, or B, respect him, or hopefully both.
Right.
And if you have that combination,
yeah.
Why change?
I agree. Great points as usual, Bobcat.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Two, Jeremy, Mississauga. Hello.
Hi, Bob. Good to hear from you again.
Thank you.
I'm going to change the topic a little bit.
Anything you want.
Tennis. If that's okay.
Yeah.
So earlier on this radio station, actually over the last couple of weeks, I've heard a whole bunch of people talking about the possibility of Eugenie Bouchard getting votes for the Lou Marsh Award. And it got me to thinking back to a little while ago when you were mentioning with the Leafs and putting the players on the bronze bench in front of the ACC. Aren't we, if we vote or if the members of the media vote for Eugenie Bouchard, essentially rewarding somebody who hasn't really won anything yet? I mean, I'm sure that in the future, over the next couple of years, there will be more talks about it. But right now, isn't it kind of a little premature to do something like this?
Here's how I would look at it. And, of course, I don't know if you know, but I was on the Lou Marsh Committee for about 10 years.
Right.
Last year was my first year since I resigned from it. And I left simply because I thought it was time for other people to sit there and have that opportunity. Because I think it is, I consider it an opportunity and an honor to be able to be a part of that decision-making process. Who else would you nominate? Who else is going to be on that list?
Could you argue potentially Drew Doughty? That would be probably the top for mine to win both the Stanley Cup and gold medal for Canada in the same year. That would be my top potential. I mean, I know, once again, it's hockey.
Hockey is a hard one. It's a hard one to do these days. You know, with all... With all the great hockey players out there, it is really difficult for a hockey player to stand out, especially since the voting happens kind of in the middle of a season. And, you know, it happens in December, and you tend to be, it's just a natural thing. You tend to be focused on what's going on now, and you forget about last year's Stanley Cup, and you forget about world championship performances or Olympic performances or anything else.
Right.
Look, he'd get votes. There's no doubt he'd get votes. Wouldn't Jonathan Toews get votes, too?
You could definitely argue that for sure.
You know, I mean, I don't think this would be Sidney's year.
No.
Would it be PK's year? Could you make an argument for PK? I mean, there are going to be a bunch of guys that would rate consideration. And okay, then you're going to go to the other sports. And I think Doughty as a defenseman who statistically hockey fans will recognize his abilities and import, but you can't put it in context. You can't put it on a piece of paper. He didn't score the most goals or get the most assists I don't think he did. Was he absolutely the best single player for the LA Kings and for Team Canada? I'm not saying he isn't, but you got to think about that. Is he the obvious choice as a hockey player? Like the overwhelming obvious choice as a hockey player? If you just took all the hockey players, looked at the seasons they had, do 9 out of 10 people say, oh, Doughty had the best year? I don't know. because that's the start. You got to get to that point before you can even then try and do the apples to oranges comparison, which is the hard part of the Lumarche. What's the size of the field internationally? We have two athletes in Bouchard and Raonic who have achieved unprecedented success in a sport where the depth of field is pretty strong. Tennis is played in, I think, virtually every country in the world. Now, there aren't as many tennis players as there are soccer players, but it's not like hockey. Hockey's a pretty small pool globally. Virtually nobody south of the equator plays the sport, and a whole bunch of countries north of the equator don't play the sport. Makes it hard. Makes it hard for a hockey player to win that award. It's got to be an almost off-the-charts kind of year. So there's the answer to the question. It was so long-winded, I forgot the question. Dave in Calgary, hello.
Robert.
Yes.
Greetings. Thanks
Salutations.
For having me on. Welcome back.
Thank you, pal.
So I want to have a chat with you about the Blue Jays and the lack of activity at both trade deadlines. Is Guy Lawrence and Sungwon Keith Pelly, are they cheap? And did they turn down Paul and Alex as far as moves?
No.
Or is Alex just not believing that the team is good enough or he's incompetent and didn't make a move where he should have because he was gun-shy?
Well, you're pointing a lot of fingers that I always dispute this kind of stuff because you're implying stuff that we don't know what went on. Now, did Alex have a deal where he went to Paul Beeston and Beeston went to Guy Lawrence or to Keith Pelly and asked for money in order to accommodate that deal? I don't know.
How do we explain then the fact that there was no activity in a year where fans are saying, again, here we are September 2nd, like you said a few minutes ago, and we have no meaningful baseball going on in this city? This was a year for this team since the offseason. No one will argue that they needed starting pitching. Everyone talks about the offense in August was in a swoon and they weren't hitting and all this stuff. But even next year, yeah, the future is bright, but we're using the word future again. No one knows whether those four quote-unquote studs, as you called them a few minutes ago, are going to deliver anything for this club.
I love this argument because it's also theoretical. If Tampa trades Price, correct?
Yeah.
So you'd like to have Price on the Toronto Blue Jays.
No, I'm not talking about, let's leave Price and Lester out of the argument. Why not go to the Philadelphia Phillies and pick up someone at a big ticket off their roster? Why not go pick up one of their stud starters and go to the bottom feeders in the league and go and pick up a big ticket item?
I understand the background theory. You're going to present the argument in such a way so that it's defensible from your position. But your position is that they didn't do any of that, that there were no conversations with the Phillies. You presume that to be the case.
So then
we don't know whether Anthopoulos talked to the Phillies about whoever, and if they were amenable to discussing it, which teams always are. And did it get to the point of, well, in order for me to do that deal, I got to have this guy. And then I understand how you guys play this game. And then you do the dominoes and say, and the reason that didn't happen is because Anthopoulos, either he's an idiot because he didn't talk to the Phillies, or the deal didn't get done because Rogers is too cheap to allow him to do the deal. I mean, you create scenarios that have no basis in fact, so that they're, at the end, somebody is to blame. I understand. When you throw a dart against a wall, you'd like to have a target. I'm sympathetic to that. But it's simply too simplistic an argument. We will never know what conversations took place. We will never know what the demands of other teams were. We know in the Samardzija deal, at least at one point, the Cubs were looking for two of our stud young starters. So Sanchez, at least, and maybe another one. Well, okay, if in fact that was true, and you believe that that was a good deal for the Blue Jays to make, they should have made that deal, we can have that conversation. But any discussion that starts with the premise that they didn't do anything, therefore, fill in the blank, is lost on me. Because there's a space in between those two things that is a vacuum that we are not privy to. Look, I have no vested interest in sitting here and defending this company. In fact, there's nobody more critical of this company than I am when it's warranted. And I understand Rogers is a big company, but every company is trying to make money with each division that they have. And I don't care whether the one that you work for, whoever you work for, they're trying to do the same. So are these guys. The payroll is $130-something million. It's a pretty big ticket. Now, it's not my money. They want to spend more. I'd be happy with that. We know it's not your money. You don't care. But this whole underlying notion that somehow Rodgers is cheaped out and that's why this team isn't winning is just utter nonsense. I got to take the break. We'll come back with more calls. 29 before the hour. It's primetime on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Steve Brennan is back from his interminably long sabbatical, which he takes every year. People bitch about me and the amount of time that I take off. Do you ever hear anybody complain about Brunt? What, because he still goes on the radio from, you know, he does a 5-minute radio hit from his palatial estate in Newfoundland, and so people say, oh, he's still working. No, he's not. He doesn't do a damn thing. He does, like, what does he do, 20 weeks on this show a year? Then he takes about 20 weeks vacation and about 12 weeks where he might be doing other things but not this show. Like, lay off me. Or don't if you can. Alex Anthopoulos will be with us, Tim Bezbachenko, Masai Ujiri. So we got general managers of the soccer team, the basketball team, and the baseball team. What happened to Nonis? Get him another day. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe will always also join us. Clifton in Etobicoke, what do you want today?
Well, glad to hear you back, man. I'm also glad to hear Mr. Brunt back, buddy. All set for the winter now. Yeah. Football and everything is all...
Yeah, we'll be around for a while now. Relax.
Yes, sir. Now, Mr. McCown, you know, on my sporting team, sir, I always like to have a starter and a backup. I'm not big on platooning anything. No quarterback in and out, no point guard in and out. And that's one of my knocks against John Gibbons, is the constant platooning of these guys. Now, Adam Lynn, to me, is a great hitter. I don't care what Francisco has to offer. I think Adam Lynn should be your everyday first baseman, no matter how... You know, poorly he's hitting against lefties.
What are you going to do with What do you do with Encarnacion, though? Are you going to put Encarnacion back at third?
DH, full-time DH. At the start of the season, I think Encarnacion expressed that he wouldn't mind becoming a full-time DH. And I think that's what these guys should have done. You know, Adam Lind, like I was saying, man. Like, if the longer you leave this guy at first base, and I know Mike Wilner and these guys who are these numbers guys always talk about he's had enough chances. But, yeah, if he's having two hits there next week, two more weeks from now, give the guy time. Like, keep him there. One more thing about these two kids, Goes and Pilar. I know there's talk that, you know, like these guys might be a platoon in outfielder next year. Listen, man, pick one guy. Whoever you think is better, trade the other guy. Bring in someone else. Bring in a backup. But, you know, like this platooning thing, I don't think it ever works because we're late in the season. We don't know how good these guys are.
Yeah.
Any of these two kids.
I thank you for the call. I don't think across the board it's necessarily the manager's philosophy that platooning is the best thing to do. I think you get into situations where things evolve, roster changes are made, and then injuries happen, and you have to act accordingly. I don't doubt for a second that if Lind had shown an ability to hit left-handed pitching at something above an anemic rate, and I do agree with you, I'd like to see him given a greater opportunity. But it is what it is. I think he's justified in keeping him away from left-handed pitching. And in that scenario, whether he plays first base or DHs, he's only going to be in there principally against right-handed starters. You'd play him. I understand your position is put him at first base, make Encarnacion the DH, and go from there. See, I have a completely different idea about that. See, I'd put Encarnacion at third base as long as Lurie's out. Or even when Lurie's in, if Lurie's going to be a second baseman long term, that's where I'd put him. You're going to tell me that Francisco is a better defensive third baseman than Encarnacion? Francisco's a stone finger at third base. I know Edwin Encarnacion is not a great defensive third baseman. In fact, he's a pretty crappy one. But in the bigger picture, given the alternatives, as long as Lurie's out of the lineup, Encarnacion would become my third baseman again. Now, you might think that's nuts, but that's how I do it. I'd rather have a platoon system, if necessary, at first base. I'd rather look for a bat that I could put at first base. Because you know what? Anybody can play first base. Not anybody can play third. Right now, you've got Encarnacion and sometimes Lind at first base, and you got this, well, we have to play. They didn't have options. You put Tolleson at third base occasionally, but he's not that great there, and his bat's not very good. Francisco, when he's hitting, which was for about a month, it was great. But overall, he's cost them games. But they didn't have options. If you have Edwin in the lineup at third base every day, and you want a platoon at first base, easier to find a bat that you can put in there that can play first base, but is a better bat and less of a defensive liability. Yeah, you get a few ground balls, but basically all you're doing is playing catch. That's your biggest responsibility. George in Listowel, Ontario. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing, Bob?
Fine, thank you.
Bob, I'm here to tell you, I know you defend Gibby a lot, right?
Well, I don't really defend him. I like the guy, but I don't apologize for liking him. I gave my case earlier in this show. If I look at if I analyze Gibby's performance to the best of my ability, based on the things that I see and the decisions that he makes, it's pretty difficult for me to say that he is responsible for much of what has gone on this year in terms of negatives.
That's your opinion, Bob. But
of course, it is.
I think. Gibby is responsible. Tell me, why is Colby Rasmus playing center field?
Well, Colby Rasmus isn't playing center field every day, but Colby Rasmus is the center fielder, and who has played better than Colby Rasmus?
The team performed better when Ghost was here.
Gose has no power, and Gose is a 230, 240 hitter. I would like it if Anthony Gose was a better offensive player, and I will agree. I was among the first to say Anthony Gose is a better defensive outfielder than Colby Rasmus.
All right. Here's another
one. So would I? But he got a long stretch out there.
All right.
The other thing is Colby Rasmus also is a starter. You have to lose that job. He's on a much bigger ticket than Anthony Gose. I'm not a Colby guy. I've never been a Colby Rasmus guy. I wouldn't even twitch at re-signing him as a free agent.
Okay, Bob, two things, and then I go. Number one, last year we brought Dickey over here, and he opened the season, right?
Yeah, both years.
All right, but last year.
Yeah.
We also take along his personal catcher, all right? First day of the season, who did Gibby use as a catcher? Aaron Sebier. How can that make sense? Gibby is not the man for this job, Bob. Gibby.
That's such a minute point. I mean, I appreciate you have an opinion on this, and I respect it. But based on Aaron Sebier being the opening day catcher, Aaron Sebier was the opening day catcher because it was opening day. Period. End of story. That was it. And Aaron Sebier had worked with Dickey. If I'm not mistaken, it was Aaron Sebier that caught Dickey at the World Baseball Classic. I may be wrong, but I think he did. And I know he'd worked with Dickey and with the knuckleball stuff. Now, what we found out about Aaron Sebier is he was just a crappy defensive catcher. Knuckleball, fastball, curveball, roll the ball. You know, bowling ball. But that's such a minute point and so easily explained away. To have an opinion on the manager based on something that happened on opening day 2 years ago, a one-day event, a one-time thing, you lost me there. Sean in Coburg, you're next, and you got about a minute and a half, most.
I'll make it brief then, Bobcat.
Thanks, pal.
And you stole it off me. That's exactly what I was thinking of throwing double E over at third. I still think we should throw Gones now that he's back up. Throw him at second. Get that stiff Rasmus out. I don't care. You know, he's getting 10, whatever he's getting. Who cares?
So he's gone anyway at the end of the year.
Exactly. So we don't owe him anything. We don't owe him anything. Throw Gones out in center field and let it go from there. Put Morrow in the pen, and let's see if we can win some games that way. I mean, I think the season's done anyways. But, I mean, let's play some of the guys that we think, Bob, is going to be showing up in 2015 in spring training.
Yeah, it's a good question, though. Which of those guys, I got to let you go. But that's really the intriguing question, I think, now, is which way do you go in 2015? Are you going with the...
That's what I want to know, too.
Are you going with the young... Are you going to go with the young studs? I'm leaning towards that. I'm leaning towards, maybe you dangle your two older front-of-the-line starting pitchers. See what you can get for them. Maybe you go with kids. But if you do that, maybe then you also have to move an Encarnacion or a Bautista or maybe even both. And do you re-sign Cabrera? I love Cabrera. I love what he brings. Is he too old? Are any of these guys too old to retain and hope that this starting pitching in a year or two or three matures and these guys are still around to contribute? They're fascinating questions. And I don't pretend to know all the answers to it, but we'll talk a little bit about it. The Senior Vice President of Baseball and General Manager of the Blue Jays, Alex Anthopoulos, joins us next hour, along with Tim Bezbachenko, Masai Ujiri, Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Brunt will be in here. More Primetime coming up.